Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of Redheads Book Club May Edition. It's gonna be May, Snitch's birthday month, Snitch's choice month. Hey, girls, how you doing?
Did we do that on purpose?
No, but we could
like this
now.
Was the case last year as well.
Well, yeah, because May is always your month. That's how it works. That part is true. Each get 3 months of the year, and you always get May, and you get January.
Yes, that's true. I do.
And you get September.
Wow, you're so good.
What do
that.
I get?
You get what comes after. I get February, then you get March,
which is my birthday month, which is so sweet.
Right? I feel like it always winds up that way. And you get July, and then you get October.
I feel like I always get December. That's the only one that stands out
for
me.
No,
you don't feel that way. You do. It's like saying that feels right. Yeah, because it's the data.
Something about me.
It's the Dana.
Thinks that you get December.
Dana gets December, August, and April.
I like
those.
I like when Jax is our redhead savant.
Yeah, literally. No, I am the redhead's historian. I have all of the redhead secrets and just all of our inventory filed in my brain. And I like it that way. So if you have any redhead's history questions, feel free to reach out.
That should be like a bonus episode.
That should be. We owe everyone a bonus episode of like a little explainer of ourselves. We need to do like a trailer episode where new listeners can listen and just know who each of us are, what kind of books each of us likes. That way they don't feel so intimidated just coming into the middle of a book club, low key, 53 books in.
Wow.
Jax, 53 books.
I think one of your reels should be you reciting from memory every book in order.
Great idea.
I haven't done it in a while, and I think I still could, but I definitely have a looser grasp on it right now.
This is like a redhead's historical little story for the listeners. One time we were in an Uber driving somewhere. Like, we were all pretty drunk, like, on our way, and Jax dropped this little nugget that she has every single redhead's title memorized chronologically, people. And all of a sudden, there she goes. She is going title after title, book after book, in history. There was, at this point, it was probably like 30-plus titles. Yeah. It was honestly like it was Rain Man style perplexing, and it was the most entertaining. I was like, where am I?
We were in Nashville. Oh. We were in Nashville, like on the way to Topgolf.
Including bonus episode Gwunge's thing. Like, she missed nothing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I feel like that's something Dana would be able to do, though. Dana, could you do it?
No, not even close to like off the cuff. If I had like a few minutes to memorize it, maybe, but not right now.
Oh, you would need to study. Because I guess because I do so much admin for the show, humble brag, working hard, slaying, because I do so much admin, like each book each month is seared into my brain. And I feel like I'm also always talking about the redheads at a glance, like books we read this year. And I just am always thinking about the books that we read.
It makes you a better student than the rest of us.
Thank you. I can drop redheads jargon at the drop of a hat.
Wow. It's so impressive.
Well, thank you. I'll try and make a video and see if I can still do it 53 books deep. But that brings us to today's episode, which I guess we should get to. And that's today's episode. We are on book number 53 of The Redheads, and we read When We Were Strange. I don't know.
When We Were Enemies.
Every book title that of A Snitch's Choice is Before We Were Strangers, When We Were Enemies. When We Were Enemies by Emily Bleeker. And it's not time to get into the book whatsoever. But I just wanted to tell you guys, like, that is this month's book. Now, before we get into it, I've got to catch up with my redheaded girlies. And Snitch, I'm going to start with you because you have had a busing week.
I've had a busing month. I just got back from Stagecoach yesterday. And it was so fun. Like, just a grand old time.
Did you miss us?
Watching your Stagecoach content.
Thank you so much. I really feel like it's where I thrive. Did I miss you? Yeah, but like you could have been there.
Oh. Were you just missing us the whole time?
No.
So much who so that it ruined your trip?
No.
Did you read the whole time?
Who was the best performer?
I read the whole time because I was nervous. Actually, I didn't even. Sorry, that's like a lie. I tried to read and then I just like couldn't get in the headspace. So the entire flight home, I just read the entire time and then I was fine. Who's the best performer? Morgan Wallen was unbelievable. And also Miranda Lambert, she blew my socks off. She was like a queen. I loved her. And the worst one was Eric Church. I don't know if you guys saw all the drama about his performance, but it was horrible.
Was there drama at large or just with you?
No, no, no. Like, went viral on TikTok. They were like, Eric Church is going to be canceled after this performance. Like,
just because he didn't deliver? Like,
he just didn't deliver. And it was just like a really awkward performance. And he basically, it's a shame because he's so good. Like, his voice is so good. He just sat on a stool with his sunglasses, as he does, did not move, and sang like worship gospel music the whole time, which like normally like love, but it was the entire set. And then like every now and then he'd do one of his own songs, but it was really bizarre. And like the like everyone left. It was empty. It was crazy. It was really, really weird. And then I was talking to this girl who works for Golden Voice, like the production company. And apparently Golden Voice is so mad about it because like he got paid like a shit ton to be there. It's all this drama. But yeah, it was really fun.
Wow.
Weekend.
Damn.
Wow. Well, we're also rolling into your birthday, Snitch.
Yes, we are.
How
we
old are you turning? My
birthday. A ripe old 27.
Oh, that's the best age.
No.
What are you hoping for your 27th year?
Peace.
Amen, sister.
I like
internal
that.
Peace.
Do you have any big do you have any big birthday plans that you need us to attend?
Well,
you have your big party.
Actually, only Dana's attending, right?
Yeah, I'll be there with bells on, Snitch. Someone's got to show up. No one's around.
I'm
for the redheads.
So sad. I like any celebration for you. It's like always going to be popping off, and I'm just so sad to miss.
It won't be anything crazy. I'm just doing like a 25-person dinner party. Like, it's not going to be like a rager. But I thought that would be a nice way to, you know.
Josh was actually the one to connect the dots that it was the same venue as Abe's birthday.
Yes, this is just the outdoor patio.
Oh my God, that party also, I like, it was like wild for me.
Fresh off my wedding.
And I like literally got just, I just had a great time.
Yeah, no, that one was fun. This won't be like that. I opted not to move the party inside.
Snitch, this is the first episode that you're recording from your new apartment. How has that been for you?
Oh yeah, it's been really, really nice. I feel like I haven't been here because I was like in France and then I was in Florida and then I was at Stagecoach. So I still like am getting acclimated at ordering furniture. Like everything in my apartment as it is will be gone at some point. So it's just kind of figuring all of that out. But it's good. It's lovely. Like it's just a great, humble abode.
Snitch, last episode you said you couldn't wait to meet the girl on the other side of this move, and that's you now.
I said that. That's such a like smart, intelligent thing.
I don't remember.
Maybe it wasn't you saying that. It must have been someone else.
No, I feel like I remember that when she's like, "I can't wait to like be the girl." Like,
yeah.
But I do feel like it's a bit artistic and poetic for what Snitch usually gives us on the pop.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm that deep.
Maybe you said I'm jealous of the girl on Thursday when this episode comes out.
Oh, yeah. I did say that. So different from what you said.
I like Dana's version better. Snitch really opens up on the redheads, and she's, like, in touch with her multiple selves. And she's talking to them.
Yeah, with her multiple personalities.
I like that version. That feels right.
That feels right.
Well, thank you for the update, Snitch. Becky, how are you?
Hey, Jax. I'm great. All has been pretty mellow on this front. I'm heading to Florida this weekend for a friend's wedding, so I'm honestly just really excited for warmth. And, Jax, I'm aware that you live in Florida, but I'm going to the other side of the coast.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, nobody comes to Florida without telling me, but I figured you must have your reasons.
No, I'm going to West Coast Florida, to Naples, and I knew that it was just not. I'm going for like 13 minutes total. So.
No, understood.
But I'm excited to see sunshine, that's for damn sure. And I'm really excited for like Snitch birthday season. We're like into spring, and it's just like a good time of year.
Mm-hmm. It's like the one month of spring that we get.
100%. So, all's good.
Good. Dana, how do you do?
Nothing too exciting over here either. The Knicks are in the playoffs, which is the big thing happening in my life. Red and I are a house divided. They're playing right now as we speak. This is Tuesday night, game 4. If the Knicks win, they advance to the second round. So everyone put out some NYC energy here.
Some Philly energy here.
Snitch, who are you voting for?
The Knicks.
Yeah.
Who are you rooting for? I mean, duh. Like, no offense. I have no affiliation to Philly.
Affiliation?
Whoa. What about your friendship with Rebecca?
Yeah.
That doesn't trump the place I was born and raised.
100%. That would be, like, psychotic if I was, like, at all perturbed by that.
Yeah.
Jax, how are you?
I'm good, Satchel. Dear Satch, thank you so much. You know, chugging along, working hard. Cracking necks, cash and checks.
Hey.
Yeah.
The usual business. I'm very excited to get into this episode, though. And if I may, I think we will.
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Love it.
So this month we read When We Were Enemies by Emily Bleeker, A Snitch's Choice. And I would like for Snitch to give the summary of the book for anyone who's not reading it or forgot it, or, you know, just to keep us all on the same page.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. When We Were Enemies by Emily Bleeker is basically a two, what would you call it? Like two plots at the same time sort of thing. One is about this woman who is like the, it's in the 1940s, mm-hmm. and there's a war. World War II?
Yes.
World War II. And she's Italian living in America. And basically she comes from poverty. She works at a like prison camp with a bunch of Italian prisoners of war. And it's basically like her life there and kind of how she eventually ends up becoming like a huge Hollywood star. The other side of it is her granddaughter in present day, and they're all, you know, like rich now off of the fame from her grandma. Her mother is also a huge star, and basically she's getting married and she's going back to the place where her grandma was from to do this like dumb documentary, and ends up uncovering all of these truths about her family, her grandma, and kind of it's like the intersection of the two stories.
Beautiful, yeah. Snitch.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. So what were everyone's thoughts on the book, Snitch? Let's start with you.
So here's the thing. I enjoyed it as I was reading it. And then, like, Jackie told me she hated it. Sorry to spoil.
I texted you and I said, I tried to keep it really vague. Let me tell you exactly what I said. I said,
do you hate it? You said, yes, very much so.
No, at first I said, are you reading the book? You said, yeah, 71%. I said, I need to know a snippet of what you think. You said, I'm enjoying it. I said, okay, cool. She said, I don't have a visceral reaction. I didn't respond. She said, why? Do you hate it? So then I was honest, very much so. Okay, so then I said that, and what, that changed something for you?
So then I was like, oh, wow. Like, didn't even think to, like, hate this. I was like, oh, it's like, I wasn't like, this is the best book ever. I was just like, oh, like, this is a nice, enjoyable read. I like the dual little thing. Like, I like it's about, like, this rich family here. And then also it's, like, there's this historical fiction piece of it. Like, I was like, oh, like, it's interesting, like, you know, difference. But then once I finished the book, I, like, thought back on it. I was like, what even happened? Like, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, there's.
Oh, we know.
No, but I get that. Like, reading something and, like, not disliking it and just, like, reading it.
Yeah, it wasn't like I was, like,
you didn't think too hard about it. And then just me saying something, like, made you think about the book as a whole.
But it wasn't, like, a book where it was, like, because I felt like it went by very quick. I wasn't, mm-hmm. like, falling asleep as I was reading it. Like, it wasn't, like, a hard read.
No, and it wasn't, like.
Which is normally my tale for, like, I hate this book.
Oh, that's not totally fair, because there could be easy reads that are just, like, so dumb. And I was talking about this on the toast today, that this book wasn't, like, offensively bad or anything. Like, it wasn't, like, painful and I hate every minute, but, like, it was a genuine fucking waste of time. And
oh my god, this is my first, like, flop.
I have to give context. I had to give context because I just read another book that's a history book. It was called Serena. And it was so good, and it was just, like, very hefty and a little bit more serious. I guess it was historical fiction, but not one of the sillier ones. And I was just had to go right from that to this, like, piece of shite historical fiction. And
oh
so,
my God, piece of shite.
Piece okay. of shite, seriously. And I was just, like, so shell-shocked. And I feel bad, like, for how much I disliked it, and I wish I had nicer things to say. I just, like, I want my time back. If we weren't reading this for the Redheads, like, I would not have finished it.
Wow, you would have DNF'd it. It wasn't that bad.
No, but it was wasting my time. And I only have, like, so much time for entertainment and books and TV, and, like, I would not have given this more of my time.
Okay, guilt me. Why don't you?
No, oh my gosh, snitch. But people need to like not take the book personally. Like when it's your book, if your book flops, like you didn't write it. We're just all taking a chance.
I just have such a great reputation on the Redheads for my book choices. Like I'm always at the top of the list and stuff.
Everyone gets at least one flop.
Well, according to the rankings, your lowest book that you've given us was Brightside.
Oh, which tracks.
Yeah, but that's like actually, it's actually not even that bad. So we'll see where this winds up. I would be curious. I wish I read more comments about like what the Redheads community thought about this.
Yeah,
book,
what did
I do
they
feel
think?
Like I'm so biased. Dana, what did they think? What do you know?
The comments on the most recent Redheads post are abysmal. They hated it. We're stuck over.
Oh my god.
Yeah. But you know what, Snitch? The Redheads are very authentic, and we do not read the books before we pick it because we want to read alongside our community. So
yeah, of course.
With that comes some risk if we don't.
Oh my god. I can't express how happy I am to move on from this book. This is one of the worst books I've ever read. LOL. I haven't read it yet, and after reading the comments, I won't be. This was horrible. Can't wait for the episode.
Okay, so I'm glad that we're getting to speak our truth. Rebecca, what did you think?
You guys, I actually didn't think it was as bad as you guys thought. Honestly, I thought Bye Baby by fucking Carola Loveling was so much worse. So, for whatever reason, like that book, like, was just not for me. But I was not compelled one way or another with this book. I didn't hate picking it up, but I was reading it and I was like, oh my god, what is happening here? I wanted more from Vivian Snow's storyline. I couldn't have cared less about Elise Branson. Like, if I never see her, hear her name for the rest of my life, it'll be too soon. She could not have irked me more. And it was like, all of it was just like kind of whack in its own weird way. But again, like, I was like somewhat entertained. It didn't offend me. It didn't bring me... it didn't spark so much joy. It was like neither here nor there for me. But it really, wasn't such a polarizing read as it seems like it was for Dana and Jack. So Snitch, looky here.
I agree.
Look at us.
Good.
By the way, we're two for two.
We're forming a little allegiance, my friends.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Otherwise, this episode would just be like boring of us trashing the book. So we have an episode. We will have a conversation. Dana, what did you think?
This was one of the worst books I have ever read in my entire life. And I've read many a book.
It can't be the worst book you've ever read in your entire
one
life.
Of.
It wasn't that offensive. Like, nothing happened.
No, one of. Sweet Snitch's reaction is literally too precious. Like, I can't. She's like, what do you mean?
Well, no, it's like, just like.
It's just shocking because, like, there's nothing, like, wrong with the book. You would read the book and it could just get passed off as any other, like, Kristen Hannah, Taylor Jenkins Reid, just like historical romance. Like, who will ever know how bad it is? But when you take a microscope to it, like, it's so bad.
So where do I begin? The parallels between the plots were actually insulting. You're telling me that in 1943, Vivian Snow kind of fell for a priest and her own marriage went to shit, while in 2024, her granddaughter meets almost the exact same fate by falling for a priest. While her marriage dissolves. Oh, and both Elise and Father Patrick's fiancés died in a tragic death. What a coincidence. I think I was actually like most laughing when the Italians switch sides to be on America's side, because it's like, oh, there is nothing left unresolved. Like, everybody is going to get their happy ending here, which, you know, I don't dislike in a book. So maybe that's the redeeming quality. The plot was just too ridiculous for me to take seriously. Like, nothing was relatable. Hunter working behind Elise's back to fund a documentary on his own wedding. Like, Mother Grace Lynn is so dim-witted, she lets whatever boyfriend she has mar her relationship with her daughter. Vivian's Miley Cyrus. She's an interpreter by day and a budding famous singer by night. The writing was insane. It was so trite and corny and cringeworthy. I will say, though, it was not terribly written. Like, sentence structure was there. Vocabulary was not abysmal. It was just like cringe after cringe after cringe. I will say that like once I accepted the train wreck that this book was, I found a new peace with it. Like I did kind of embrace the hilarity of like how insane the coincidence and the ties together were. And it became almost therapeutic by the end because I just like embraced how funny and insane it was.
Yeah.
Okay, well, at least you enjoyed it. It sounds like you did.
I just plowed through till the end because I'm like, what is like it needs to end? And seriously, like are all of the priest gonna just leave the parish because they met a girl? But it, so it seemed like, and I thought that the Vivian Snow storyline was a little confusing because it's like he didn't leave his faith for her, correct? He went back to Italy, correct. Continued to be a priest. Is Barry next to her?
No.
Hayward?
No, I think that is Tom Hayward that is buried.
Wait, no, it's not because he's buried under the church.
No, I don't think anyone is buried next to her.
Yeah,
agreed. I think it was just a tombstone.
Oh.
I think they, like, thought that he went AWOL, and so they just, like, have a placeholder for him.
Got it.
I am confused about the DNA test and, like, what DNA they're getting.
1,000%.
They got DNA from the cousin.
Oh, yeah, but why did Trombello buy a plot for a man who went AWOL? And why didn't Vivian
cover it up?
No, but he went AWOL, like, goodbye, good day. And he just showed up one day and got buried. That's weirder. And why did he pay for it when Vivian was already having success by then?
Yeah, yeah, right. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's weird.
He didn't need to pay. Everyone thought he was AWOL. Like, it was more confusing pretending he was buried.
It's weirder if he came back and got buried and nobody saw him.
Yeah. And Vivian's like so famous, like no one's ever looked into that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Tom Hayward is like the most well connected family as well.
Yeah, like that was weird that like they just were like, oh, bye.
Also, his literal murder took place at like a very well populated
right.
event.
No, and like all these prisoners, actual prisoners, are free to bury a body with no guard in charge.
No,
they're all
they literally,
it's like hours long that they're covering up a crime when they are prisoners.
No, right. That's what I didn't get. It's like, where was a guard?
It should have been that there was a guard who was like, who hated Tom, who was in on it, just to cover like the plot. No, this was, like, seriously ridiculous and preposterous is what I'm saying. Also, like, what's the vibe here of, like, we're going to lure all these priests away from the church? Like, what is she trying to do? That was just, like, a weird trope.
Totally. It was
also, like, she should have tried to make it work with Hunter. He seemed like a catch.
Completely agree. I know he was like personified as the devil incarnated because he was funding the documentary without telling her, but I was Team Hunter sometimes.
Yeah. Maybe he just didn't think she was mature enough to know. You know? She's kind of a baby. Totally. As opposed to being like, you know, if you had a job, you would know what it's like to fund a documentary, but you don't. Oh my God. And her like takes on like PR crises is. When she, like, it was also so dated. She's like, this is how it feels, you know, when did one of my, like, her phone was blowing up. She's like, did one of my clients go pantyless in a nightclub? Like, girl, is this 20 years ago? Like, seriously? Does anyone wear panties anymore?
Literally. Everyone wears panties out.
Yeah, people wear only panties.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was seriously a train wreck, and I'm already having so much fun, and we haven't gotten into the DBQs. So let's do that, but before we do, I need to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Caraway, which is so apt because y'all girls at the Redheads absolutely love Caraway. We are a couple of chefs. We like to cook for ourselves, for our partners, and we do it well with Caraway, non-toxic cookware made modern. Caraway is the best cookware. I love it because it's easy to clean, so you're not like over the sink scrubbing dishes after you've cooked, but it's also non-toxic. So I personally make all of my baby food in my Caraway, and it helps me stay a clean queen. It helps me feel good about the baby food that I'm giving to my children, and it is well loved. They have over 65,000 people who have rated it with 5 stars, and 4 of those people are on this podcast. Does everyone love their Caraway? Say aye if you do. It's Redheads endorsed through and through. Just a reminder, the iconic cookware set comes with the saute pan, fry pan, Dutch oven, and saucepan, plus lids for all of them, a canvas lid holder, and magnetic pan rack for storage. The lid holder is a major key, especially if you have a smaller kitchen, but even if you have a bigger one, like, what are we doing with lids? We're using the caraway lid holder. It's the ultimate kitchen setup and will save you $150 versus buying the items individually. Plus, if you visit carawayhome.com/redheads10, you can take an additional 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive for our listeners, so visit carawayhome.com/redheads10 or use code redheads10 at checkout. Caraway, non-toxic cookware, made modern. Thank you, Caraway. We absolutely love and adore ya. And I will love be making adore. Some dinner tonight using my Caraway. So, yum. Our first question. The novel shifts perspectives and timelines from Vivian Snow in 1943 to her granddaughter Elise Branson in present day. What did you think about this structure, and was there a perspective you looked forward to more?
I love Vivian's compared to Elise's.
Yeah.
Snore Fest 2024. Yeah. That's how I felt about Elise
I Branson. Disliked Vivian's less. I disliked Vivian's less.
But I just, like, wanted to shake Elise was my problem.
In the beginning, I was, like, actually into Elise's. I thought the engagement scene at the opening was, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good book. Like, this seems to be up my alley, and kept wanting to go back to present day. Totally agree, Red. Immediately switched to Team Vivian.
Yeah, I feel like this had all the makings of a good book, and it's why it was a great choice, Margo, and why I would endorse it as a choice, because...
By the way, the bio, like, sounded so good.
Yeah. Like, it's about, like, an old Hollywood icon. Her legacy of children reminds me of, like, Carrie Fisher, Billy Lord, and who's Carrie Fisher's mother? Like, a three-generation Hollywood family. Also, like, Liza Minnelli and Judy Garland. Judy Garland.
Mm.
Yeah, so I thought that was, like, so great. It's giving Taylor Jenkins Reid. I love, like, a flip-flopping timelines. And I feel like usually I like the modern swirly because that's just easier to digest than, like, getting into the frame of mind of a POW camp in Indiana in 1943. And yet Elise did make me like that.
And Snitch, you typically don't like switching perspectives. Did this bother you?
It started bothering me when they started leaving the chapters on cliffhangers.
Yeah, she really started to do that towards the end. I was like, oh, okay, respect. Yeah.
She did. She was pulling that.
And that pissed me off. But when it's not like that, it's fine.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, I definitely gave the book a little bit more gravitas, but it was thin through and through. Next, what were some parallels between Vivian and Elise's stories? Did you enjoy these overlaps, or were they too heavy-handed?
I mean, Dana wrote these questions.
I think Dana's fiery little diatribe at the start really covered
it. Fun fact about this book. Not only is there not a book club guide, I went to a Barnes & Noble to buy it, and it wasn't even in Barnes & Noble physical location. And then online, like, it's just not available in store. You can get it online everywhere, but not in stores. Where'd you find this book, Satchel?
Didn't it, like, just come out?
No idea, but I personally enjoy parallels in books when they're less overt. This was just too in your face. Like, I just can't get over the pastor. Are we kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, father.
It came out in September 2023, so ignore me. But at least it was on Kindle Unlimited. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, the pastor was probably the deepest parallel, which just feels like a weird thing to hang your hat on, like trying to lure them from the pulpit. Does anyone else think that's just, like, such a weird main thing for your book?
100%.
Yeah, like, she could have done anything
else.
It's
just so weird that it happened twice. Like, must we?
And is that a thing? Is that a thing that happens a lot? Falling in love with the father?
I mean, when you have someone as compelling as Elise Branson, how could you not get pulled away?
The best show on TV, that happens, but they make it way more interesting. I was more hung up on the fact that in the present day, both of their fiancés passed away. Like, what?
In the present day.
the, Tom was murdered.
Father Patrick's car accident killed his fiance.
That's not weird to me because I feel like people trauma bond over that and then they like.
But like to be a fiance, to be tragic. Like, I don't know, at least make it his wife or something. Like the fact that it was both fiancés and now they were both single. Like everything about it was just too coincidental. Yeah.
Even like something that bothered me, you know, in the beginning scene where she sees like the three prisoners in the office and there's like a kerfuffle. I felt like the description of that was just like so meek. And it's like that was kind of the linchpin for her connection with Anthony. And it's like, what do you mean? They all just like fell to the ground. Like, and then 100%. She was like, he's a pacifist. It's like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the big reveal of like the chemistry initially between them. And she literally just like kind of tried to tell the guard that it wasn't his fault.
Yeah, but it's like there was nothing what he stepped on someone's toe. Like it was just so mild.
There were quite a few moments like that. Like give this author an int. She takes like 1,000,000 miles. For example, the entire concept of this documentary getting filmed, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I guess I'm getting married in Indiana, to like fast forward. She's literally the star of this documentary, has put her entire life on hold.
Yeah.
She has moved there. Her fiance is nowhere to be found when it's literally about the two of them getting married. I was like, how did this happen?
It's also about her mother who wants the documentary. She's not there either. Everyone else can say no and prioritize their business except for her, who's the one who wants to do it the least and also has a business. Like, girl, where's your backbone? Yeah. You think you're like this big, strong,
modern
woman.
And he's funding it.
Right. Yeah. But like, why can't you say no to all these people that you don't even like or care about?
I was just going to say the zoomed in for the counseling, the pre-Kana. I was like, you're filming a documentary and you're going to have this man on Zoom?
I'm 100%.
I cannot wrap my head around this. Like, this is your pre-marriage counseling. You're going to have like a janky MacBook Pro like in your frame?
Also, if he's an investor in the documentary, doesn't he want it to be good? And wouldn't he carve out more than 10 minutes for this part of the documentary, which seems to be like a core central tenet to the story?
The only part of this book I actually laughed at and liked was when she said three things were going to happen. Either like my mom's going to break up with this guy, like I'm going to say no or I'm going to go. And guess number three is most likely. I was like, oh, this book has wheels.
And then the wheels came off.
Yeah.
Sure does. Wait, last thing. Did anybody think that when she knocked on the door and Hunter answered the hotel room that he was banging Lisa's mom?
Yes, 100%. Oh, yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah.
No, like, I didn't think that. Something. But I thought he was an investor very early on. Did anyone else think that?
I didn't think money. Like,
and then another time she was talking about him and there was something about money. I was like, oh, yep, he's the silent investor.
I more so felt like it was some sort of like arranged marriage of sorts, but like behind her back.
I thought affair all the way with the mom.
Interesting. Yeah, that could have been good too. Did you think Vivian was going to romantically involve herself with the priest Anthony Trumbello? What did you think of Tom, and was Vivian's murder justified?
Tom's murder.
Yeah, Vivian's act
of
murder.
Well, Vivian murdering Tom.
Oh.
Yeah, I did think that they were.
He was going to kill her.
But I also think that Vivian and I thought that they would get together, not just like, oh, we helped bury a body and now I'm going back to Italy and I'll send you a postcard until 1999. And we never kissed, and I'm not the father of your child. But, yeah, miss you.
And, hot take, I didn't think Tom was that bad. Obviously, the abuse is not good, and, like, he had huge warning signs. But, like, there were some parts where, I don't know, he, like, rescued her when she was walking home. He was very rich. He came from a good family. He just kind of wanted her to, like, not work with prisoners all day and, like, be by his side, which in this, it's not good. But, like, think of the time. It was the 1940s. Like, he had a temper, but I didn't hate him as much as I think the book wanted us to.
No, I did.
I did, too. Like, he was certainly very rough and controlling, and I agree, like, that you have to, like, contextualize and, like, realize, like, she's with the enemies, and she's like dancing for them and singing for them, and like that's really weird for someone who's like literally fighting against them. But what I also like bothered me is I felt like every American GI and American soldier in the story was a piece of shite, and of course like only the enemies are the good sweet ones who are mistreated and misunderstood.
Yeah, that's
but
a
where
good
are the American also, though, like, the hometown what, heroes?
Yeah, but also like what bothered me is like he started being rough with her like quite early, like before they were even like dating really. Like there was, didn't she have like a bruise like the first time they ever hung out?
Yeah,
like, girly.
Yeah, that she just 100% like walked into it and didn't like see the signs along the way. Also, I felt like, I wonder if there were camps like this for German soldiers, because I feel like when you think about it, like putting Germans in their place instead of Italians and like Nazis and just like, and it's easy for us to like sympathize with the Italian prisoners now, because eventually they did become our allies and like the Italians like were not nearly as bad as the Nazis. But like in 1943, in the middle of the war, like imagine like your girl is like getting sweet on the Nazis.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's so I just, I, yeah. Right? Like, you do have to kind of.
Yeah,
think
no,
about
that's
it
why
that
I kind of was like, I get. Yeah,
I
know,
but
he's
I also.
Being a little cray.
No, and Tom aside, I'm just like, Vivian, what is you doing?
What is Vivian doing? Oh, yeah. Like, what is you doing?
Also, like, Jackie, to your point, she literally, like, started getting sweet on the POWs, like, 30 seconds into her job at Camp Atterbury.
She, like, barely tried.
She, like, it was, she literally sat down and the kerfuffle happened within 30 seconds. And she was like, ooh, so
no, she's, like, making, like, looking for anyone to, like, make eyes at. Not the Americans. Not the heroes.
She's like, no, Vivian, you can't. You can't do this. No, Vivian, stop. It's like, lady, you've been here
what
for 30 seconds. What about
when she
keep
got engaged on the first date after 5 minutes and then spent the next and 2 days being like, shit, did I regret? Like, are we engaged?
No, I totally felt that because no, I was like, girl, no, you're not engaged. Like, I'm like, he used you. That's how I felt. Yeah. I was shocked when he was waiting for her with the ring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also.
Wait. Speaking of ring. You know what I realized? That the ring that Elise is walking around with day in, day out, like her powerful fake. Ring, is a fake diamond.
So fake. Oh my God. When she put it on her other hand, she's like, why didn't I realize I could just wear this without someone else deeming that I'm worthy? And it's like, no, yeah, you
yeah,
could.
That was
but it's
cringe.
Not about like, so, it's not someone deeming that you're worthy. It's like you, it's not just them choosing you. It's like you finding them too. Like it's a mutual thing. It's not meant to like keep women down to like wait to wear a ring on your finger. Like, yeah, sure, you could wear it before, but it's a symbol of love. And it's meant to mean that you found love. Like no shade, no hate, Elise.
Some of the PC text. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, yeah. The when the girl interviewing called her boss babe, and is that girl at the end gonna get the job even though she's a super fan? Like, was that a good interview?
I hope not. That was so inappropriate.
No, I thought she crossed the line.
Yeah. And then also what I wanted to say is I don't think enough what was made either about like those POWs. Like when Anthony said he enlisted like to fight for Mussolini and. Be a fascist, like what did they do? You know, they're act like they just like showed up like, hey, how y'all doing?
And they're like, the food's not good, we want more pasta and we want a church and we want all this. And they're like, ah, damn, he read the Geneva Convention. Okay.
No, and it's like we're doing it in the hopes that they're treating our boys like this. Like they're not. They're not.
Yeah, they're not. No, they're not.
No, it was just like, it was just so weak and like just nothing was like
agreed
thought through. I don't know, I can't explain it. It was like just very mild.
It was surface.
Yeah. Next question. Elise's intuition throughout the whole book causes her to be skeptical of her fiance Hunter's intentions. Did you suspect any foul play? What did you make of the revelation that Hunter was funding the documentary? Was the ensuing breakup between Elise and Hunter a little impulsive or justified?
I mean, I think it was, I don't even know if it's about being justified or impulsive. Like, I think that she didn't even really like him. So, like, they shouldn't have been together in general.
That was
But
the
then
problem.
When this happened, it's like, yeah, like, that's all you need. I did think there was obviously something weird with Hunter. I just didn't know what it was. Like, I thought, if anything, like I said before, I thought it was just, like, he was just with her because, like, of the, like, fame and glory in a way. But, like, there was something weird with the mom. I don't know.
I don't know why this narrative of, like, she was engaged before but can't talk about it and it needs to be repressed and she needs to plow forward was so accepted. Like, why can't she feel both? Like, why can't she articulate that she was previously engaged and that was really hard and she had a traumatic experience and is now also ready to marry Hunter? Like, I didn't relate to her with how much she felt she couldn't talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like something was definitely off with Hunter. I didn't suspect that he was funding the film. When that was revealed, I frankly didn't even care.
That was the thing, like the big aha moments were like, okay.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I would have, I don't know what would have made me care, actually. Like, even the paternity test. If they were like, yeah, Trumbello's your dad, I'd be like, great. Like, you're Italian. Congrats.
Yeah. That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah. Also, I feel like the big developments actually, like that Vivian got pregnant in her first night of marriage and she was carrying a baby, they just like slid that in. She walks through and Christmas will be a little different this year because there's a baby. But meanwhile, you have to make the fact that like Father Patrick touched my hand. I felt the electric tingle.
But didn't we like expect her to get pregnant? Like they didn't have contraception.
Yeah, but she could have not been ovulating.
That's true. I knew for sure she was going to get pregnant.
I was hoping we'd learn more about her rise to stardom. That sounded like a better plot.
God forbid.
Well, that was what I thought that was so lacking. When I was like, I wanted more from Vivian Snow's storyline, I was like, okay, you literally just had a baby 30 seconds ago, and now all of a sudden you have risen to be like the most successful singer, actress, starlight in Hollywood. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Elise's movie star mother, Gracelyn Branson, is portrayed as an absentee mom who prioritizes her many boyfriends. What did you think of this mother-daughter relationship? Wow. Mother-daughter relationship.
Mother-daughter.
What did you think of it?
Absurd.
Yeah. She sounds trash. Like a shitty mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Absurd. Were there parallels or meant to, for there to be parallels between Vivian's relationship with her parents and Elise's, like kind of on her own?
I wish they explored Vivian's relationships more. I would like to hear about the mom and the loony bin, and the dad was like an interesting character on his own. Good point. That's though like the one thing I didn't find a parallel between, like that dynamic.
Also, when they were talking about Vivian's friends, like Mary and Carly.
Who?
Yeah.
Especially Mary. They're like, oh, Mary. Like,
what?
It just like, came out of nowhere. And she was just like, talk about them like we know who they are. Carly, I know, works at the USO and she was like a mother to Vivian. But like Mary, like,
wait, what about when they were,
she was like, have you talked to your dad yet about moving in? And that was never revisited.
No, like all this stuff with the friends. Or like then there was also the girl who works in the office with her, Judy.
Yeah, who was that?
She was just talking about them. She's like, well, Judy eats lunch with her
husband. Yeah, in the cafeteria.
Well, Judy eats lunch with her husband, so it's fine. Who the fuck is
Judy? I can't believe you even just pulled those names out.
No, because I remember towards the end, she's like, when she goes back to the camp, she's like, Carly says this and Marley says
and her sister was such a secondary character.
Oh my god, yeah, what happens to the sister?
Someone needs to check on Aria.
Oh my god, someone needs to check on me.
There was like one point when Aria's like, things are gonna change.
And she was like, things will never change. Even if I move to Philadelphia, I'm always with you. And it's like, no, then you're in Philadelphia.
1,000%.
Oh, wait, wait. What about when she came home and Aria was missing? That was one of the cliffhangers. But then when went back to the chapter, she was just like out for a minute.
No, where was Aria?
She was like babysitting off one of like the kids.
Oh, right, right, right. But she couldn't leave the makeup remover in the mailbox? Right. As she always does?
What happened there?
100%.
Left her sis out high and dry. Ooh, okay. During the live documentary recording, Elise begins to put the pieces together that her grandpa Tom may not have been the war hero she was taught he was. What do you think of this plot twist? Was it fair for Mac to leverage this knowledge in the spirit of good storytelling?
No, Mac was a slimy little sleazeball.
Yeah, Mac was an absolute freak of nature.
He was, but I do feel like when they said he's like the Ken Burns of celebrity documentaries, like if you try and think of it like that, like this man's like doing a job and he does a really good job at it. Like the fact that he was sleeping with Gracelyn made it so that he couldn't be trusted. But like he is a documentarian. Like what did you think? This was just going to be a puff piece? Yeah, if there's a story to tell here, like, we're going to find it.
I kind of respected the vision. I also was like so confused when they were live time figuring it out and had no interest in figuring out and going back to the past. I was like, can you just tell me who the dad is and like what's happening here?
Yeah, yeah, like cut to the chase.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'm not trying to like go on this journey with you. Just spell it out for me.
Yeah, I agree. And they barely ever did spell it out. Like we know that Tom was the dad, but we don't know. And we know that Anthony went back to Italy and they wrote postcards to each other. But we don't know, like, the grave thing. We don't know why his family doesn't acknowledge. Like, Gracelyn is their daughter-in-law. I know they don't accept the marriage, but you would think, like, your son dies in the timeline of a war. And you have a grandchild, like, that you would give a rip.
All you're weird. So right that it makes no sense for Tom to have paid or for Anthony to have paid for that gravestone. Like, wouldn't that just call into question that he's been found and where had he been?
Right. Also, the sister Moira, who had bought the shoes for Vivian and bought the ring for Vivian, lived until the 90s. Like, she would have been able to corroborate, like, Tom really married this girl. So.
Yeah, that was so bizarre.
We gotta watch the documentary.
Sounds good. Especially because they cut out most of Elise. Next, did you enjoy the historical touch points of learning about the Italian POW camp and the nightlife at the USO? What did you think about Vivian being from the same country as the war criminals yet requiring loyalty to the US?
I thought it was interesting learning about the camp. I didn't know a ton about it. I didn't know that there was one in Indiana, so I thought that was enlightening. And I also like think it's an interesting concept to like you have POWs and then halfway through the war they become allies.
Allies. Yeah, that's true. That was interesting.
Like, okay, storyline I could get on board with, but it's just the way that it unfolded.
Agreed, I didn't know that there were POW camps in the U.S. and, like, logistically, how and why, because they were fighting overseas, so they, transported all of them back here. Like, would like to know more on that piece. And the fact of the camps in general, like, is a fun fact. I don't know why I needed a whole book on it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like a lot of times authors, they, like, find a nugget about history, and they're like, let's add color.
It's true. And I remembered it. We were in the United States the whole time. I was like, oh, that's not how I usually read about war.
Yeah.
But I actually did like that it was in the United States. Like sometimes, like when a World War II book takes place in Europe, I feel like it is like bound to get like 10 times heavier. So it was like a refreshing take on World War II that it was a little bit lighter in content and a divergence from typical tropes. So I think that can be some checks in the when we were enemies column.
I agree with that. And then also, I guess the part about present day Camp Atterbury is being used to shelter refugees from Afghanistan is I think, true. I don't think she would include that if it wasn't. I think it said that in the acknowledgement. So that's also very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, I feel like with the Elise part, like, the author just really wanted to, like, make that a part of the story where it kind of didn't fit and is, like, its own story. And yeah. She's just, like, with that shoehorn, like, I'm going to start an arts program and you're going to like it. The documentary. And, oh, after the major, that really was when the book really got me. Like, when Mac's major betrayal and Elise is, like, I'm done. I'm not doing this. And then literally the next Elise chapter, she's, like, so we're filming the documentary. Mac said he'll donate the proceeds to the Refugees of America Association, and I'm doing it. Like, you have so much money. Like, you really have to, like, sell your soul for the proceeds from this documentary. Like, there's a million other things you could do to help.
1,000,000%. You have so much money. You really need to be like, you know what? I'm going to keep wearing my grandma's ring. Like, because it's my ring in my family. Like, no, babe, buy yourself a new ring. Like, you can afford it. Use that bank, cash it, and, like, let's go.
Yeah, and I do love the fact that the stone isn't real after all. And I feel like that is emblematic of the use of the ring in her relationships. Like, not for Dean, that part doesn't add up. But for Hunter, that, like, he gave her a phony ring. Looks nice on the outside, but isn't real.
Preach.
Next, the story briefly touched upon Vivian's mentally ill mother and the deceased fiancés of both Father Patrick and Elise. Do you wish we got more details on those subplots?
Yeah.
I mean, the Vivian's mother stuff was, like, really intense and dark. And I'm glad that we didn't, even though that's probably would have been a very interesting path to go down. I'm glad that we didn't, because, like, to juxtapose that with, like, the unseriousness of the rest of the book, it would be hard.
It was so dark, it felt out of place in a book that was so surface. Like, I couldn't even believe that was part of this novel.
I agree with that.
I agree. I think, like, in terms of how there were parallels between Elise and Vivian, I do think disappointing dynamics with their mothers is, like, one parallel. I don't think it was entirely the fault of Vivian's mother that it was not, like, the relationship that Vivian hoped and dreamed for. So, like, I will say that, like, that could be one tie that we haven't yet addressed. But, yeah, it was pretty heavy.
Yeah. Last question. Elise and Father Patrick have an instant connection. What did you think of this chemistry, and how did you view Father Patrick's efforts to end his priesthood and pursue Elise via showing up for a job interview at her refugee PR firm?
Yeah, that was weird. Like, there's so many other routes you could have taken.
And I just want to say, the connection that was kept going back to was not established well enough for me as a reader. Like, I feel like sometimes that's really when a book is a really strong book. It's like when you can feel, like, why and how two people fell in love and, like, how they relate. But it's like she just looked at him one day, again, like Anthony after he stepped on that guy's toes. She looked at him one day and was like, I feel sizzle. And then it's like, I haven't felt that with anyone else. It's like they're not giving us much. So I didn't feel this magnetic pull to Father Patrick like she did, because the author didn't establish it for me.
And, like, yeah, the one touch in the beginning that she describes as magnetic, and that catapults her through this, like, vortex of Father Patrick for the rest of the book. I needed a better descriptor. When he came, like, running towards her after, I thought he was ignoring her, and then he, like, at the end was so worried he almost missed her. And then all of a sudden he was like,
Elise, I have had incredibly strong feelings for you since the moment we met. I was like, oh my God, Father Patrick, you have got to put a lid on it right now. This is embarrassing.
Yeah. No, and, like, are the strong feelings in the room with us?
Right.
Snitch, as the TikTokers would say. Are there strong feelings in the room with us?
I don't think so. Maybe for her.
Yeah. Have we beat you down, Snitch?
Yeah, you have. Also, I'm just so hungry to break Passover.
Okay. Well, the good news is we got no redhead questions about this book, so we can skip that segment and go straight to the moral of the story. If anyone wants to take a stab.
All's fair in love and war.
That was mine, Snitch.
History repeats itself.
That's a good, like, if this were a movie for Hollywood treatment, that would be, like, a good catchphrase underneath.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Or like, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree's mother, you know? Because it falls far from the tree, but not from the tree's tree. You know what I mean? Put that on your movie.
And smoke
love. That's it.
Okay, now it's time for the Hollywood treatment. Please, Lord, don't make a movie of this. Who would you cast as Vivian, Satchel?
As Vivian, I had Ana de Armas.
Oh, that's nice. I have Rachel Zegler.
Oh, that's nice.
I have Camila Mendes.
Good as well.
That's nice. Dana?
I have Sandra Bullock.
Like, literally, she's not Italian.
That's not right.
She, like, she's dark not hair.
19.
Yeah, your too. Biggest gripe is she's not Italian? She's literally 4,500 years too old. Sorry, no shade.
Also, no one any of us chose is Italian.
That's fair, yeah.
By the way. Also, another weird thing with Elise is, like, she couldn't stop, like, shading women who, like, get anti-aging treatments.
Right.
Like, she was so hung up on that. Like, if someone, like her clients or her mom were, like, anti-aging, she's like, I don't understand why we have to anti-age. And then if someone's, like, aging gracefully, like Dottie, like, oh, it's Dottie. Okay. And then Elise, who would you cast as Elise? The most annoying bitch on the planet.
Aiza Gonzalez.
Who's that?
Are you kidding?
Aiza? Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Still don't know.
I like her. I'd put her in anything. Rebecca?
I had Scarlett Johansson.
You love putting her in stuff. I feel like if we watched every episode of Redheads Back, like, you choose her every time.
I didn't know that I did that.
That is a good one. Dana?
Rachel McAdams.
Good. I didn't care enough to choose someone, honestly. But now it is time for our overall Redheads rating of this book so that we can finish this segment, finish this book, put it to bed. Snitch, you go first, as it was a snitch's choice.
I'm going to give it like a 3.6.
Okay. Rebecca?
I gave it a 3.3.
Great. Dana?
I'll be generous with a 2.2.
I'll be generous with a 2. The overall rating for this book is a 2.775.
That feels wrong.
That feels right. And it's still, it's not even your worst book then, Snitch. It's above Brightside.
It's above Brightside.
Wow.
I feel like that kind of makes sense.
How did Brightside rank so low?
I don't think I disliked Brightside.
You guys fucking ripped me apart.
Yeah. Brightside was the worst book I've ever had the unfortunate of reading.
Wait, what was Brightside?
That book.
That,
you know,
like, chooky young rocket.
No, but the thing is, we used to be a lot harsher, I feel like, in our ratings. Like, our rating for Husband's Secret is a 2.875. It's right above When We Were Enemies. Like, that does not feel right. Husband's Correct. Secret, like, slapped.
Yeah.
Was that our second book?
That was our first book ever. First book ever. So now When We Were Enemies is 35 on the Redheads ranking.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because, and you're wondering, we have 53 books. How is that possible? It's because a lot of them are tied. Mm. But out of the 53 books, it's number 47.
Okay, my biggest takeaway from this experience is justice for Husband's Secret.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, this rankings list gets really interesting when you break it down.
We need to have, like, a live reaction reel of, like, all of us when you tell us the rankings of everything.
Yeah.
We need to have a live re-ranking that's a different list of how they've aged in our minds.
Yes.
We have a lot of things we need to do, apparently.
Perfect time for a new era of the Redheads, because we now have all of the gusto to make this happen.
We do. But one more thing it's time for is to continue with this episode so we can end it so Snitch can break Passover, because she's fading fast.
Yeah.
For the other books that we read this month, did Snitch, you read?
I didn't. I, like, have not been on my reading game, like, at all. I just barely make enough time to read the Redheads.
that's been me. But then this month I did read a book because we went to Barnes & Noble and it was on the table and it just looked like it was made for me. And I'm so glad because I never would have found this book otherwise. And the book was called Tsarina, as in the female Tsar, not like Serena Williams. And the author is a historical fiction swirly who I had not read before. Her name is Ellen Alpsten. And it's a story of Catherine I. So she was actually the first empress of Russia. Everyone knows Catherine II, who's Catherine the Great, who ruled Russia for a really long time. This is a story of Catherine I, who was born as a serf and rose all the way to be the Tsar's wife. And when he passed away, spoiler alert, Tsarina and Empress of Russia, which is really major. She died a few years later, so she didn't rule that long. That's why you haven't heard of her, but her story is insane. On the book, it described, one of the quotes for the praise for the book said, this makes Game of Thrones look like a nursery rhyme. And it's true. Like, it's very gory. It's very violent. There's a lot of descriptions of like sexual violence, physical violence, just like those were crazy fucking times. The punishments are incredibly harsh. And, just the way that people like treated each other. It was really, really crazy. So I loved the book, 5 stars from me. And now I want to get back into reading, even though When We Were Enemies like took me to a place where I didn't want to be. Like, I still have the Tsarina spirit in me where I'm like, I want to read more good books. Bex?
That Tsarina spirit.
Tsarina spirit I have in me.
Oh my god, I did not read anything, but I'm honestly compelled to get that Tsarina spirit.
You should. I don't know if you could handle it. I don't know. Dana?
I have a lot of recent books downloaded on my Kindle. I thought I had finished this. Turns out I hadn't. So I finished The Covenant of Water by Abraham Burgessi. No. His other book, Cutting for Stone, incredible. This, bleh.
And that's it?
That's it.
Okay, the redheads are slacking. Like, we're seriously majorly slacking. And we need to do better collectively. I intend to do better this month, so I'll keep you posted. But I got to let you know what we're reading next month. And after, I didn't know what my vibe was going to be, but I am still feeling historical fiction. I'm liking about learning about new people and new places and new times. Therefore, we will be reading Lady Tan's Circle of Women by Lisa C. It is a historical fiction book set in 15th century China, which is not a place that I've been literally and in a literary sense. So I'm really excited. It has 4.73 stars on Goodreads. Everyone who I said I might choose it is like, that book is fire. I feel good about it.
Jackie, I don't know why it was a hidden comment on our most recent Redheads post, but someone recommended that and said you specifically had to read it. So the Redheads will be happy.
Interesting. It was hidden, but you could see it?
You can click like view hidden comment.
Oh, I always thought it was just for the person.
No.
Interesting. Embarrassing. Okay, well, great. That makes me feel doubly excited about my choice, and I hope you guys feel excited about it. And even if you don't, like, you have to read it. So
I'm so excited.
Sorry.
I'm so excited.
You look really excited. I'm going to let you go. Thank you guys so much for your time. Thank you to the Redheads. Thank you to our community. You make doing this so much fun. Thank you to Snitch for this book that gave me a laugh that I haven't had in so long. Like,
you're so
seriously
welcome.
5 stars. 5 stars.
You're so welcome.
Love you guys.
Love ya. Bye.